Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Laura Jackson, and welcome to Secrets of the Side Hustle, the podcast from the Sunday Times Star that's all about phenomenal female founders and how they turn their passions from a bit on the side to a thriving business. From beauty to manufacturing, tech to finance, and more. On this show, we get the ins and outs, ups and downs of setting up your own company. You can subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can do this via whatever podcast app you normally use. It's Sarah Bell, founder of Evermore London, who's my guest for this episode. She made her start working in social media and digital content for various fashion and beauty brands before catching the entrepreneur bug. She's been running her own company for a few years now, and I was so excited for her to tell me all about it. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Laura.
I'm so excited to talk to you because I really love your candle brand. So we are like really excited to have you on the podcast. For people who don't know about what Evermore London is, can you kind of tell us a bit about your business?
Yes. So Evermore is a scented candle company, and we make and sell natural rapeseed candles. And our mission when we rebranded in 2019 was to become the UK's leading sustainable candle brand that still sits within the luxury market.
So why did you decide to make candles? I mean, how did you even start to make candles?
So basically, I was working full time. It was around 2014, and I was working for other like fashion and beauty brands in-house doing social media and content. And I got to the point in my career where I needed to make a decision, and that's what I wanted to continue doing. And I kind of had the bug to do my own thing. And I come from a family of entrepreneurs, so I think it kind of rubbed off on me a little bit. I had a real think about what I wanted to do, and I knew I wanted to do something creative. So basically, I bought a candle making kit from Etsy just to give it a go. And it was at that point when I realized the level of quality of ingredients that you can and components that go into making a candle. Because I had no idea at the time. I didn't even really know how the fragrance gets into the wax. I just was a bit clueless. So I was really intrigued to understand more. And the kit that I was sent, it was paraffin wax and then like a really synthetic fragrance oil that was like bubblegum flavored or something gross. So I was like, right, okay, this doesn't look good to me. So I ended up researching it all online and discovered more about paraffin wax and how it's quite bad for you. And at that time, there wasn't really any kind of natural alternatives in the UK on the market. And so I kind of started experimenting. I bought some soy wax in and some fragrance oils and was in my kitchen on the hob, just like melting the wax, making little silver tins. And I started giving them to friends and family and people really liked them. So it kind of just all snowballed from there, really.
I mean, I love that you bought a candle making kit from Etsy and that's how it started. And you kind of self-taught, I guess.
Yeah, massively. I did so much research because I had no idea. And it was I just had to like look online and read blogs and forums and just kind of, it was all trial and error, really, just kind of testing it all out myself. And it's not like it does take a while to get it right as well, because there's so many different variables. You've got to get the temperature right, you've got to get the right ratio to wax and fragrance and the right wick size. There's just like so many different layers to it.
Do you have to have any sort of health and safety certificates to be able to make candles in the first place?
Yes, you do. So if you're selling to small boutiques, it's not so much of an issue, but once you start selling to like the big department stores and overseas as well, yeah, you have to have all the certificates in place. So like, especially with candles, if you're shipping them overseas, they have to have safety data sheets and all this stuff that I didn't know about in the beginning, that I've just learned along the way. But now we obviously have all that in place now because we're shipping globally.
You first launched Evermore London as a side hustle in 2015. Like, talk us through the early steps of managing a full-time job and then teaching yourself how to make candles and starting a candle business.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of hard work, I'm not going to lie. So I was just basically working evenings late into the night. I had a loft room basically became my candle making studio, and I was just up there in the evening with wax in my hair, like burnt fingers, just making candles and packing up my orders. And obviously I couldn't do it in the day during the week, so it'd just all be happening in the evening or at the weekends. So it was just a full week of work, but do you know, if I felt at the time that it didn't feel like a chore because it was exciting and it was something I really wanted to do. And I feel like if it's right, you should feel like that, and it shouldn't feel like you're kind of like burning yourself out, so to speak. So kind of did that for about maybe a year, and then I said to my husband, it was actually the year that we got engaged, and I was like, text him, and I was like, just handed my notice in, and he was like, no, we've got a wedding to pay for, what are you doing? So I was like,
you didn't talk to him about that first, you were just literally handed him your notice.
We had a conversation and he kept saying, no, you can't do that, you need to stay in your job. And I was like, okay. And then there was this one day, I wasn't happy there either actually at that point, and I was just like, I've handed my notice in, but don't worry, I've got a plan. So I basically then, I was really lucky that I got a freelance job with an agency who I managed to stay with them for 2 years. So I'm really grateful for that, because I know opportunities like that don't often come around. I worked with them 3 days a week, and that gave me a little bit of time to work on Evermore. So that freed up my time a little bit. And then as time went by, I reduced my days from 3 days to two, and then eventually to 1 day. But that it was about around a year's time that I was working 1 day freelance, and the rest of my income was from Evermore. And that was really hard. That was like probably the toughest year, because I wasn't making a lot of money, and I just had to like get by on what I could. But I just persevered and made it work. And I think, like, yeah, like I said, if you know in your heart that it's right and it's going to work, you just keep chipping away at it. So that's what I did, and eventually it paid off.
I mean, talking about that year, it must have been really tricky, especially when you kind of don't know where the money is coming from. But also, what was it like having this kind of candle factory at home? Because you're so immersed in business that there's kind of no escaping it. What was that like?
Yeah, it was intense. It was quite full on, and our house did smell amazing, which was quite nice. When people used to come around, they were like, oh my god, it smells so nice. That was good. But yeah, it was full on. There was boxes everywhere, there was candles everywhere, because I've used to make them in little white tins, so there was like tins stacked everywhere.
You're also sending out all of these orders. This is at this point just you.
Yeah, just me. So it was hard. It was, and you know, I did so many things wrong. Like I wouldn't pack them properly. So that I had to learn quite a lot. Like I'd put them in boxes and wrap them and hope for the best, and then they'd end up arriving like dinted or something had happened. And so I had to, like, you know, there was quite a big learning curve along the way. But eventually I did get a studio just down the road from my house. Which was really great. So I got to have like my own space, and I was making everything in there. So that felt really nice.
So Sarah's candles, and this won't surprise you if you've ever smelt one yourself, were a huge hit from the off. She then had to work out the next steps of building up her company. And the first point of call was raising cash.
We considered crowdfunding to get some cash to outsource the production, because I either was going to hire more staff to take care of production in-house, or I outsource it and get it done. I want to say professionally, not that I'm not professional, but like, you know, get it done by some people who have got the safety certificates, et cetera, et cetera. So we considered crowdfunding, and we had to raise a certain amount of money privately before we went to market with the crowdfunding campaign. It was quite a lot of money, actually. I was like, if I had that money in the bank, I probably wouldn't be doing the crowdfunding in the first place. But we actually went to a client of my husband's and asked them if they wanted to be involved. And they actually became our main investor. So they were like, don't do the crowdfunding. We want to work with you on this. So I was really lucky. And they're an amazing company. So I'm really grateful for everything they've done for us. So we have one main investor and they've basically helped us to facilitate the whole rebrand. So we got to just start from scratch, and everything that I'd learned from the beginning of kind of all my trial and error and all the mistakes I made in those first few years, I kind of could compile them all together and make, you know, make sure that everything we were doing was perfect.
Let's talk about the business today. How do you get an idea from inception to market? What's your process?
So my process is, so basically everything we do with the candles, it's all kind of seasonal. We do a little bit of market research with our customers to find out what they are interested in and what is selling well, what isn't selling as well. And kind of we work from that basis and take it from there. So we've just released a candle called Venus, and that is, it's all about summer. And the timing of that was quite good because it was as the country was opening up again, and also we were quite lucky with the weather, so the timing was really well. So that's kind of, that's had a really good response. So it's just kind of making sure you're finding those points in the year where it connects with the customers and it resonates with people.
How many candles do you currently stock at the moment?
At the moment, so in the warehouse now, I would say we have over 1,000.
Wow.
Because we've got 7 fragrances now. And we have to make sure we have rolling stock of all of them, because we're stocked with places like Net-a-Porter and Anthropology, and now Nordstrom in the US. They place really big orders, and sometimes we don't know when they're going to place them. We're starting to get a pattern come through now, but we have to make sure we've just got, we've got like a trigger point. So when it gets, each SKU gets down to about 200, that's when we have to start thinking about ordering more in and making sure that it's bumped up again, because we don't like it to get any lower than that, really.
So your production where the candles are made is a separate place to where the candles are sent out for distribution?
Yeah.
How do you, like, if you're thinking, I want to start a brand, where do you find someone to make your candles and a warehouse for distribution?
So, yeah, so basically we had a production company originally who were helping us with all that. So they were kind of joining the dots between the fragrance people, the people that make the candles, the people that supply the glass, the people that make the boxes. They kind of facilitated that. So that was great. So that, in terms of, I wouldn't have known where to start, really. I probably would have figured it out, but that was like a big help. But then last year, they actually were really affected by the pandemic and they went into liquidation quite suddenly. So I had to do it anyway. I had to like find all these contacts.
What a production company did.
Yeah. Wow. So, and we were kind of left in the dark, really.
Literally in the dark.
So I had to get all these contacts, the candle factory, the glass suppliers, the box suppliers, and kind of connect the dots myself. And I've been doing that ever since. So that's kind of what my job has really become now, is managing the production side. And it was really hard last year because I had no idea what to do, and kind of timing everything. We've got to make sure that the glass is foiled and sprayed at certain times so that it gets to the candle factory in time. And I've got to make sure the fragrance gets there. It's just like a lot of management with a lot of different touch points, but I've kind of got my head around it now. And I work quite closely with all the suppliers, so they know me well now. So it's all, I've found my groove with it.
Is everything made in the UK, or are all your suppliers UK based?
Yes. The only thing that isn't, that we're trying to change, is our, you know, the glass for the larger candles, the 300 gram candles. That's actually sourced from China, but we've done a lot of due diligence with the factory there to make sure that they're all above board. The problem that we have is that you can't get that type of glass anywhere in the UK. It's just a certain type of like off the shelf glass that's available here. And we wanted something a bit more special.
I'm someone who loves getting stuck into the creative side of things, so I was really curious to learn more about Sarah's process for picking the scents for her candles.
it's all inspired by kind of the seasons and nature and it sounds a bit cheesy, but kind of like astronomical events. So, for example, we did a collaboration with Fee Reening at Christmas last year, and that was all inspired by the winter solstice. So we kind of wanted it to feel quite pagany and apothecary. So we've got like all these notes of like clove and cinnamon. So it's really warm and spicy. You kind of like get this idea of like fires and warmth from it. So that's kind of the inspiration behind that. And then with Venus, it's very like floral, English garden themed. So I work really closely with the fragrance house and I will create a brief. And I use pictures as well, because I think it helps them kind of, you know, visualize what I want the candle to be. So I'll like pull pictures from Pinterest and like then list kind of the notes that I want it to feature. And yeah, we take it from there.
Is that quite a long process then? Because I guess they'd send you a sample and then you might ask a few friends if they think that it's nice.
Yeah, so basically that it takes a long time. So I'll brief it and then it takes them 4 weeks to kind of come up with the idea, and they'll send me like four samples maybe. So then I will, sometimes I'm not, you know, I might not be happy with those first samples, so they have to go back to the drawing board. So then it can take up to like 2 months for that initial piece. And then once I'm happy, they then send a sample of that fragrance to the candle factory. And then they will have to start testing from their side to get the burn correct. And that can take a long time. So that can take them 6 weeks to get it right. And then they'll send it to me. Hopefully I'm happy with it. Sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I'm like, oh no, it's smoking too much, or it's not, for me, it's not burning all the way to the edge. So they'll go back to the drawing board and they'll do it. So it can take, I would say, 6 months all in all to develop a new fragrance and to get it perfect. Because we often get other brands coming to us asking for a bespoke candle or fragrance for like next month. And I'm like, no, it's not going to happen. You need to like, yes, yeah, it gives us a 6 month like window to get it done. Yeah, there's quite a lot involved in it.
And how did you kind of decide your RRP? Because that's really important, isn't it?
RRP is actually based on it's a genuine markup, because the glass is expensive. Basically, the processes that we put on the glass are really expensive. So we've got the spray, which spray them like a translucent black. And then we've got the gold foil that is done in England, because we could do it in China, but where we get the glass, but the quality isn't as good. So we have it done with a factory in England who are like the best one. So it's expensive. And our boxes are quite expensive as well. So the cost price times two, which gives us the wholesale price, and times two is the RRP. So we're just making that kind of like the genuine markup. We're not like taking the mickey with it.
You talked quite a bit about kind of soy wax and rapeseed. So how important is the ingredients in terms of the wax that goes into the candles? Because I think that people don't realize that when you burn a candle, you're breathing that in. Not only does it like smell nice and it might be really lovely, but all of those fumes are going inside of your body. So it's something to really think about when you're lighting a wick on your candle, I personally think.
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of paraffin wax, when you burn that in your home, I mean, obviously it's a small amount that's going into the air, but still, if you're burning that every other day and you're regularly buying them, that's quite a significant amount. So especially if you've got like an autoimmune disorder like asthma or something, it's really not good for your chest. So the type of wax for us is really important. We want to make sure that it's, you know, it's natural and it's clean and it's not going to cause any issues, and also that where it's sourced from as well, like that's really important to us. We want to make sure that we're trying to like keep it as local as possible.
You can find all the latest news and advice for founders starting and growing their businesses at the Times Enterprise Network. Visit thetimes.co.uk/business/enterprise-network, where you can also sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in-depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sustainability is a word that we hear battered around a lot nowadays. And for some businesses, it's really not much more than a stylish buzzword. For Evermore London, that's not the case.
So when we rebranded last year, that we kind of fed the whole sustainability thing into the, you know, from the ground up, which, you know, every brand should do really, but we just kind of wanted to make sure that we'd like really focused on that in every single area. So even with the boxes, a lot of people don't realize, but with like foiling on paper, sometimes that can make the paper unrecyclable, because that foil can't be recycled. And some people don't realize that. So we made sure with our supplier that the foil we were using was definitely recyclable, so the full box can be recycled. The glass that we use is part recycled glass and can be fully recyclable, whether you use it in your home or you send it to recycling. And then, yes, all the ingredients that we use in the actual candle, we make sure that they are as local as possible. Like the fragrances are made in the UK. The rapeseed wax is sourced from either the UK or Europe.
What kind of advice would you give to business owners who are looking to lessen their carbon footprint as well?
Try and get everything as local as possible. It can be tempting. I know that we've obviously got our glass from China. It can be tempting to get stuff from elsewhere, but it's just trying to keep that kind of that local spirit and making sure that you were supporting, you know, the UK economy as well. And just researching your ingredients and making sure that it's come from a reputable source and that your suppliers, they can supply you with documentation to show that they, you know, they are above board and, you know, you've done your due diligence.
You talked a little bit about your rebrand back in 2019, from your white tin pots to your kind of beautiful branding as you have it now. Why did you decide to change?
We were getting a lot of interest from stores like John Lewis, like bigger department stores, and we hadn't boxed them. There was no place to put like barcodes on them. And also I felt like I changed the look quite a few times in those early days. And I feel like it's because I was never really truly happy with it. So we went from white tins and then we had glass jars that just had these little labels on. And I feel like it went through quite a few different variations. And then that's when we were like, right, okay, we just need to like step back and have a real think about it. And then I worked with my husband, who's got his own design agency, and we rebranded it together. And we wanted the boxes to feel quite contemporary and like bright and playful and colourful. But then we wanted the candle jar inside to feel quite timeless and classic and be able to sit in any home or interior.
Yeah. And you kind of said that this was all possible with the help of an investor who you met through your husband. Was that tricky, bringing somebody else on board within your business? And how does it work? Does this person have shares? Does this person have equity? How does that work?
Yeah, so they have equity within the company for the amount of money that they invested in us. And they're actually a really great investor, because they don't breathe down my neck all the time. They're not like, they're hands-on, but they're not like overly hands-on, but they're really supportive. And they will come to the bits, come to us and say, how can we support you? How can we open up our network to help you grow. And that's really valuable. And we're so lucky to have that. But the process in terms of securing the investment, it wasn't a quick process. It took quite a long time. And there was a bit of back and forth, and we had to do a lot of presentations. And this is the sort of thing that I just wasn't experienced in either. I had no idea. And it was a lot of research, a lot of leaning on other people who potentially did have experience in this, and just having chats with people and just learning and, you know, trying to understand how do I do a financial model? How do I do these projection figures? I didn't have a clue at the time. I was like, right, okay, I need to figure this out now because it's starting to get serious. But yeah, it's amazing what you can do when you put your mind to it and you really, you know, think it through. And so we got there in the end, which is great.
I think you're so inspiring, just how you've just literally learned everything on the job and just said, I'm just going to have to do it and crack on. You know, there's not a lot of people that have that in them. And I think that's what makes an entrepreneur somebody that's like, don't ring fence me. I'm going to find a way to climb over that fence and I'm going to make this happen.
Yeah. Well, there was a point when, because I'd left my job and, you know, you started this venture, when it was like that tough year where I was not making a lot of money, it's like, God, is this actually working? Have I done the right thing here? And I did doubt myself slightly, but I was like, no, I'm not going back with my tail in between my legs. Like, I'm like, I've done it now. I've made my decision. I have to make it work. I felt like I just didn't have any other choice. So just like, yeah, just made it happen and just carried on chipping away at it all.
The pandemic has been a make or break time for a lot of businesses, with sales of candles and other scented items reportedly up by a mammoth 29% last year. I wanted to know if Sarah has seen the impact.
Yes. So especially when the pandemic hit last year, obviously, we were hit by the shops being closed. That wasn't great because wholesale is kind of our main revenue driver in the business. But we did see a big uptick in online sales. And we actually got a lot of organic press at that time as well, because everyone was focusing on their homes, how to, you know, make your house feel homely and beautiful and cozy. And our candles got featured quite a lot. So I was like, great, this is actually kind of working out quite well for us. So we actually, online sales jumped for us. And then it kind of plateaued again this year a little bit. But like last year, it went a bit crazy.
I feel like other beauty entrepreneurs that we've spoken to, you know, beauty or in this kind of space, have felt really compelled by Jo Malone's story of her making a functional item such as a candle be something that's really luxurious, that people really want to have on their mantelpiece. It's a bit like a coffee table book, isn't it? It's like you kind of look what candle someone's burning when they go in their house.
Yeah, definitely. It almost becomes a bit like a status piece, like depending on what candle you've got in your home. Like, is it, you know, is it one of the, like, you know, top luxury brands? Is it, you know, a crafty local maker brand? It bit like you said, like a coffee table book, definitely.
And you, as you mentioned, are in some amazing places, stocked in like really cool independent stores, but then you've got the likes of Net-a-Porter and Fortnum & Mason and Harvey Nichols. How do you secure those accounts?
When we rebranded 2 years ago, I then brought on my first full-time employee, who is now my marketing manager. And we kind of worked really hard together during those early days, just reaching out to stores and like, just, you know, cold calling basically. And we were very lucky at that point that Conran Shop came back to us and were like, yeah, we love them, send us some samples. And they have since been such a great stockist for us. They've really like bigged the brand up and supported us. And I feel like once you've got one, it kind of gives you the seal of approval and opens up the doors for other ones. And then since then, the team has grown. We're still like a really small team, but we've grown slightly. And you know, we've got employees who have got a wealth of experience with wholesale and from other beauty brands. So they've got the contacts and they've opened up the doors for us. So yeah, recently we got Net-a-Porter and Harvey Nichols, which is amazing. So yeah, it's just, and especially with Net-a-Porter, like that is like such a huge seal of approval. Incredible that we're on there. So it's a bit like I have to pinch myself sometimes with that one. And they've just placed a second order, which is really promising. So yeah, it's all looking good.
And you mentioned earlier a bit about the partnerships that you've been doing, most notably Fee Greening, who is an amazing UK illustrator, and the ceramicist Karna. How important do you think these collaborations are in terms of getting your brand out there?
Really important. Last year we did 3 collaborations. So we did Alexandra Kerr-O'Connor and then Fee Greening. And it's just kind of connecting ourselves with like-minded creatives and introducing Evermore to their audience as well. So we found that it's been really, especially in those, like that was our like, that really our first year really is in the rebrand. And I feel like it kind of fed us out to new people and got us known a little bit more. Whereas this year, we're kind of now focusing on the mainline range. So we're not doing any collaborations this year because we want to try and stand on our own 2 feet. But we are still going to do collaborations in the future. But this year, we're kind of going to pare it back a little bit.
I could ask Sarah questions about her business all day long. But in the interest of fairness, I'll let someone else have a go. Here's one that last week's guest Peanut founder Michelle Kennedy wanted to throw forward to Sarah.
I would really, really like to know what the biggest mistake they've ever made is.
So in the early days when I first started and I did the making the candles in the white tins, I ordered 2,000 of these white tins. So they were like really cute, actually. They were white and then they had a lid and we had a little triangle logo, which was quite of the time, that was like embossed onto the lid. Placed the order on a platform, like a website platform, and made the rookie error of they contacted me outside of the platform. So all the communication was done in email. So I wasn't covered by the insurance of the platform. And then the tins arrived and the half of them were dinted and damaged and broken. And then when I went to make the candles in the ones that I could use, as soon as I put the hot wax, like the liquid wax in, it seeped straight out of the seam at the bottom. So they weren't suitable for candle making, even though they'd sold them to me. So I was like, oh my God, what on earth do I do? I had to beg, borrow and steal to buy those 2,000 tins. I could borrow money off my mum, my fiance. And I was like, oh my God. So I even tried to like seal, I was like, I've got to use them because otherwise, what am I going to do? So I tried to seal the inside of the seam with glue, but that wasn't working with the hot wax. And so eventually I had to basically just harass them for 6 months, and eventually I got a refund. But the lesson there is to, we've got sent samples, but I just looked at them. I was like, yeah, they're perfect. They're great, but never actually made a candle in them. So I didn't know whether they were sealed. So that was, to date, my biggest mistake. That was a disaster.
So stressful.
There was wax everywhere. So I was pouring them and then I'd done about 6. And then before I realised it was leaking it all over the table. So, oh my God.
There's a couple of lessons there, but also perseverance of not giving up and getting that refund is one of them. And Sarah, do you have a question for our final guest of the series?
My question is, what challenges have you found with practicing sustainability within your business?
Brilliant question. Okay, and Sarah, before you go, in one sentence, can you tell me, what does the future look like for Evermore London?
In one sentence?
In one sentence.
Hopefully one day bringing production in-house so that we can go full circle and go back to how Evermore began.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I think that was absolutely amazing. So much take home for budding entrepreneurs, for sure. I really enjoyed hearing all about Sarah's inspirational business journey. And if you want to buy some of Sarah's beautiful candles, you can find them at evermorelondon.com. You can also give them a follow on Instagram by searching Evermore London. Both of these are in the episode description for you. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do it on whatever podcast app you normally use. Next week, it's the final episode of the series. Honestly, I do not know where the time has gone, but don't be too sad because we are finishing off in absolute style with the founder of Alighieri Jewellery, Rosh Matani. See you then.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.